BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, recently the news of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank went viral. I mean, it was said to be the second largest bank collapse in United States history. We saw the lines of customers waiting to withdraw from their accounts in what looked like a bank run. Then President Biden and Treasury Secretary Yellen, the National Economic Council Director Brainard, stepped in to avert a crisis similar to 2008. President Biden stated the American people and American businesses can have confidence that their bank deposits will be there when they need them. I am firmly committed to holding those responsible for this mess fully. He's going to hold them fully accountable and continue to strengthen our efforts to give oversight and regulation of larger banks so that we will not be in this position again. Well, today we're going to give analysis to what happened. Will we be seeing more of this? Are we quickly heading toward a time when our government will have control of America's banks? Joining us today, we welcome Alex Newman. For those who do not know him, an award-winning international freelance journalist, he's an author, a researcher, educator, a consultant, senior editor for The New American, author of Crimes of the Educators and Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. He's a founder of Liberty Sentinel. And Alex, thanks for joining us today.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much, Jim.
So just before we get to the banking crisis, there are a couple of significant matters under development right now, Alex. First, a visit today between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin. I believe the U.S. should really perk up and take notice what's going on here, not just the U.S., but the entire world. Do you agree?
No question about it. What's happening is very, very significant. And in fact, this meeting between Putin and Xi comes in a broader context where Xi is basically globetrotting. He's running around the world brokering deals and really assuming the role that the U.S. government used to play. In fact, just recently he negotiated a deal between the Saudis and the Iranians to restore diplomatic relations after a very long period of conflict and suspicion. These are things that traditionally the U.S. government would have been involved in. And what we're watching right now, I think, is the controlled demolition of the old world order with the U.S. government kind of at the center of things and the emergence of this new world order. They've been describing it for over a decade, the people I call the deep state here in the United States, as a shift toward a multipolar world order where communist China, Xi Jinping, and the Communist Party of China will play basically a leading role, maybe not quite the prominence of the U.S. government in the old world order. But with all of that in mind, there's also another significant thing that I think is good for people to understand. I would argue that the most important, or certainly one of the most important defectors to come out of the Soviet Union was an individual who worked in Department D at the KGB. This was the long-range disinformation department. His name was Anatoly Golitchyn, and he tried to warn the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI and Western policymakers about what was going on. He said the Soviets and the international communist movement were working on a long-range deception plan. He described many deceptive plans that they came up with, including the fake Sino-Soviet split that they used to have Americans and the Western world flood communist China and the Soviet Union and back and forth with capital and technology. But he said he actually made a series of 206, I believe, very specific predictions. He gave names. He said that there'd be a fake liberalization in Eastern Europe, the Berlin Wall would collapse, eventually there'd be a phony collapse of the Soviet Union. But the communists would remain in charge, just under different names. They'd become oligarchs and members of different political parties, but it would be the same criminal cabal that was still holding the levers of power. And he said this was all going to culminate. The great climax would be what he described as a second October revolution, where the communists in Russia, the communists in China, and communists around the world, very much including the fifth column in the United States, would join forces and in this great final conflagration, bring the world under a totalitarian world system, very much along the lines of what we saw in the Soviet Union and very much along the lines of what we see today in communist China. So I think all of that, when you combine that with the information that's in the news today, we as Christians need to recognize that some very significant things are happening mm-hmm. here that are going to have a profound impact on all of our lives and the lives of our children and our grandchildren.
Indeed. Friends, keep in mind this New World Order, the Great Reset. The United States is not really in the upper echelon of these plans, and you need to stay abreast of what's going on. And again, friends, as you see these world developments, make sure your eyes are heavenward, looking onto Jesus. We know these are troublesome times, and our answers are not found in who occupies the White House, but really it's who occupies your heart. And it's critically important to be understanding of these times in which we live. Alex, secondly, this past weekend as well just went wild with multiple breaking news alerts, first starting on Friday all through Saturday, regarding the pending arrest of former President Trump. Give us your analysis of what's going on here.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. This is actually something that I've been predicting for well over a year. People can go back and look at the things that I was saying, because I think it was very clear that they wanted to do this. And I think it needs to be understood that this is about much more than just stopping Trump. And I mean, you know, that may be an important part of it. Obviously, he's the leading Republican Party candidate in 2024. And so, you know, obviously that may be a factor. But I think it's much bigger than that. I think this is really just the ripping off of the mask. This is a clear signal, not just to Americans, but to people around the world, that the old America is gone and not coming back. At least that's the signal they want to send. It's a signal to every American that, you know, we can come get you, right? If we can get Trump, we can get you. So you better be quiet. You better go along with this agenda. It's a very, very dangerous situation we find ourselves in here. You know, I think it also is a symbol of just the total breakdown of the rule of law, our constitutional processes, due process, our Bill of Rights. It's a very, very troubling sign, I think. And again, I think it needs to be understood as much more significant than just taking out a political rival. This is about sending chills down the spines of every American who's inclined to disagree with what's taking place in Washington, D.C. And I submit to you that that's probably the vast majority of Americans who are concerned about this. This is a clear signal. You know, they're just going for the top. If they can take out Trump, the message will be very clear. Nobody is safe.
Yes, and really sends a message to woe. Woe to anybody who would hold these ideals or principles, who would push for national sovereignty, you know, who would be bucking against this new world order. Woe to you. And really, it's more than just Donald Trump. It's even that mindset that many have of the principles for which he stood for in fighting against globalism.
That's exactly right. And I think it's a message, too, not just to your average American, and it very much is that, but it's also a signal to policymakers. This is a clear message to members of Congress. This is a clear message to governors. This is a clear message to state legislators that, look, we're taking out the nominal head of the opposition. We're gonna make a public spectacle of this. We're going to invite the fake news to come and bring their cameras and just humiliate Donald Trump. And you're next if you continue to stand in our way in an effective way. So this is obviously, it's chilling. It's very un-American. This is the type of thing you expect to see in, you know, very unstable third world dictatorships where political rivals are arrested. That's not to say that Trump never did anything wrong. You know, whether these charges are legitimate or not, I think is immaterial. The obvious thing is none of these charges would be happening if Donald Trump weren't the nominal head of the opposition and what's happening in Washington, if he were not the leading presidential candidate for the opposition party, there'd be absolutely no interest in whatever payments he may or may not have made to some porn star. This is only because he is a figurehead of the opposition.
We're speaking today with Alex Newman. He's senior editor for The New American, their website, thenewamerican.com. We're going to turn toward our main topic for today, which is the banking crisis. What's going on? Alex, if you would unfold what happened with the Silicon Valley Bank collapse. What brought this collapse about?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors that are important to address. You know, the proximate cause was that they were sitting on a very large number of U.S. bonds. And of course, when interest rates go up, long-term U.S. bonds, long-term U.S. Treasury bonds, decline in value. And so they were sitting on huge unrealized losses on these bonds. And, you know, all things being equal, if everything else was fine, that wouldn't have necessarily caused the collapse of the bank. But then when depositors started trying to pull out money, they ended up having to sell some of these bonds. They ended up realizing those losses. And that very quickly became obvious that they weren't going to have enough money to cover everybody's deposits. This was a very liberal bank. This was basically a star in the ESG movement, in woke progressive causes. Their chief risk officer over in Europe was busy planning, you know, month-long homosexual pride parades and lesbian visibility days and diversity things. And, you know, they were very proud of lending low-interest loans to underrepresented and underserved communities. They were also funneling American capital to communist Chinese companies. So they were as woke gets. And I think a lot of conservatives want to look at that and say, see, that's what happens when you're a woke bank. The reality is this is actually a systemic issue. I suspect that Silicon Valley Bank will be the first among many. And I think what's happening here is structural. Right? The Federal Reserve, even if we don't assume negative intentions, and I think that would be naive, but just for the sake of argument, let's assume that the people running the monetary and financial systems are well-intentioned. We have a monetary system that at its core is fundamentally unsustainable and must ultimately lead to destruction. And so we actually are seeing right now exactly what we saw in the run-up to the Great Depression. And I'll explain the parallels here. So in the 1920s, and this was even when the dollar was still nominally backed by gold, the Federal Reserve, which has basically become a cartel of private banks that has usurped monopoly control over currency, credit, and of course, interest rates, which is the most important price in a market, is the price of money. They artificially reduced interest rates. They flooded the economy with funny money being, you know, low interest, cheap money that was being lent out at rates far below what was justified by market fundamentals, which is ultimately the supply and the demand for loanable funds. And what we experienced then was the Roaring Twenties, a fraudulent boom where companies were expanding, all sorts of projects that never would have been funded, that never would have had investment under normal market conditions were getting capital allocated to them. So you had huge malinvestment, massive amounts of capital flowing into areas that would not have been profitable had interest rates reflected reality. And so you had this artificial boom, and we call it the Roaring Twenties. You know, everybody was living high. You know, there was a lot of jobs, a lot of wealth to go around. People were borrowing money to play the stock market. Companies were borrowing money. And then it all turned around. The Federal Reserve started sucking money out of the system. They started drastically increasing interest rates, and that resulted in really a liquidity crisis. And so suddenly people couldn't pay back their loans. People couldn't pay their mortgages. People were losing their jobs. Companies couldn't pay back these ridiculous loans that they had taken to invest in things that would not have been profitable under market conditions. And what that resulted in was a financial collapse that allowed the mega banks to come in and buy up everything for pennies on the dollar. So we're in a very similar situation now. The Federal Reserve essentially has two options here. They can continue to, quote-unquote, fight inflation by raising rates. That'll suck the economy into a black hole. We'll see many more SVBs. The other alternative, and again, we'll see something very similar to what we saw in the Great Depression, where there's not enough currency circulating. And this is, again, baked into the cake, right? When the Federal Reserve creates new currency, it creates the principal, but it doesn't create the interest. So if they create a $1 bill, they loan that into the economy at interest. The U.S. government borrows that dollar by selling a bond to the Federal Reserve, and then there's an interest payment attached to that, right? Well, they never created the interest. All they did was create the principal. So what happens? You have to circle back. The Federal Reserve has to create new money. And, of course, the commercial banks do this as well. I know it's getting a little bit technical. Maybe we can pick up on the other side, but this leads to catastrophe. The other option is, of course, let the inflation surge and the currency will be destroyed and the economy will be sucked into a black hole.
Alex Newman with us here today. The banking crisis, what's going on? We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is there any evidence that man and dinosaurs lived together?
Yes, indeed there is, Chris. The Bible even describes dinosaur-like beasts in the book of Job, and Job lived after the flood. Also, we see numerous places where native peoples drew pictures of dinosaur-like beasts. Almost every nation around the world has legends of dragons, huge reptilian beasts that sound very much like our modern-day reconstructions of dinosaurs. Recently, some very interesting burial stones have been excavated from tombs in South America, which clearly show dinosaurs and humans together. These stones date from long before dinosaurs were reconstructed from their fossils. As far as we know, no dinosaurs are alive today, but we have good evidence that dinosaur-like beasts existed along with humans in the not-too-distant past. It all started back in Genesis.
For more on creation, visit our website at www.icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman back with us here on the program. We sure appreciate his knowledge, his expertise, his analysis on these many issues. We're discussing the banking crisis, what's going on. And Alex, you were just reviewing for us the parallels where we are right now as to what led us, you know, to the Great Depression and the just the wonderful time it was, the Roaring Twenties, and all that unfolded and the prosperity that was going on until the collapse took place. You were talking about the options just before the break, one or two paths going forward here, and talking about the Federal Reserve, et cetera. And I think it's important for our listeners to know exactly who is the Federal Reserve. Is this a federal agency or not?
That's a great question, Jim, and unfortunately, I think this is one of the most important subjects outside of, you know, studying your Bible that Americans need to understand and don't understand. And so as I started digging into this, I was in college, I was just flabbergasted. I couldn't believe that this was actually the system that we had. And so I got tons of books, and I started reading everything I could find on this. I finally made some phone calls. I actually called up the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, and I got transferred around a few times, but I finally had somebody on the phone. And he explained to me that, yes, the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta is a private organization. It is owned by its shareholders. And so I said, well, who are your shareholders? Well, that's the member banks. And so they pay dividends to their shareholders. Now, the Federal Reserve is a very strange institution. It was created by an act of Congress. So in that sense, and there is still some nominal control that elected officials exercise over it, although it's very, very limited. The president is allowed to nominate people to serve on the Federal Reserve Board. What typically happens is the banks that own the Federal Reserve System will give the White House a list of candidates that are acceptable to the banking cartel. The president will choose from them, and then the Senate can weigh in on that as well. But beyond that, the Federal Reserve is not a federal agency. It's not a federal institution. It is really not subject to the electoral process, the democratic process. I mean, in theory, Congress could abolish it and restore us to an honest monetary system. But as it stands right now, I think the best way to explain it, it's a privately owned cartel owned by the mega banks of the United States that enriches the parasite class, the financial class, the predator class at the expense of Americans. And so they use a lot of complicated terminology, and I think it's really unnecessary. These things are actually not that difficult to understand. I taught advanced economics to high school seniors for 12 years, and I was able to explain this to them in a matter of a few weeks so that they could really have a solid grasp on this. But what happened is, in the early 1900s, after another engineered financial crisis, some of the leading bankers of America got together with some of the leading politicians in America, especially Senator Aldrich, who was connected to the Rockefeller dynasty and some of the other leading big business interests in the United States. They met on an island not too far from where I live, Jekyll Island in Georgia, and they came up with the Federal Reserve Act, or what eventually became the Federal Reserve Act. And this was a plan to create this quasi-private institution that ultimately would gain total control over the nation's money supply. And to explain to people how this works, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who hear this, Jim, who are not going to believe me, and that's good. I encourage you to not take my word for it. Go out and do the research yourself. Mm-hmm. What you'll find is that this is exactly how this bank works. Today, without gold involved, the Federal Reserve creates currency out of nothing. They literally just create it by putting numbers into a computer system. And then for the vast majority of it, they lend it out into the economy. There's a little bit that comes into the economy, not through the loan process. That's typically, you know, the Federal Reserve's own expenses. But beyond that, all of this currency is coming into the economy as debt. Typically, that is through the purchasing of U.S. Treasury bonds, of Treasury securities. And so the Federal Reserve is creating currency out of nothing. Remember, a cartel of mega banks. Creating currency out of nothing. They're lending this typically to the federal government, also on a short-term basis to the banks themselves. And when they create this currency, they're creating the principal, as I mentioned before the break, but they're not creating the interest that eventually has to be paid back. Now, there's another complicating factor here. That's the commercial banking system. As this newly created currency lent into the economy by the Federal Reserve starts working its way through the system, a lot of it ends up as deposits in the commercial banking system. Now, the commercial banking system actually does something very similar to what the Federal Reserve does. They create new currency out of nothing through the creation of credit. Again, just like the Federal Reserve, they create the principal, but they don't create the interest. And so you really have a trap here. And this is the thing people need to understand. We are in a trap, and there's no way, no sensible way to get out of this trap without completely destroying our economy, completely destroying our banking system, and completely destroying our currency. If not one of those things, then some combination of those things or all of those things at once. And that's because there was never enough money created for all of the debts to be paid back. So either they keep creating more and more currency so that we can keep on this hamster wheel, paying it back and then, you know, paying back with the interest, or they slow down or stop, and then you see what we're seeing right now. The economy starts getting sucked into a black hole as there is no longer enough currency in circulation for people to be able to pay back their loans, for companies to be able to pay back their loans. And so the system itself is unbelievably flawed. I would say really what we're dealing with here is a criminal operation. This is the looting of the American people disguised behind terms that sound confusing, like quantitative easing and things like this. But really what this is at its simplest form is organized looting of the American people. And it flies in the face of what the Bible teaches, right? The Bible tells us that we need honest weights and measures. The Federal Reserve system is basically the opposite of honest weights and measures.
Let's bring one other dynamic into this as well, if we could, and that's the FDIC, because as soon as, you know, we saw this collapse taking place and the FDIC insures deposits up to $250,000, and then we had President Biden announce that they would cover all the deposits, including non-insured deposits, not only of Silicon Valley Bank, but also of Signature Bank, which also ran into issues there. What is the FDIC? Is there any connection between the FDIC and the Federal Reserve?
Well, the FDIC is an institution that was created in the wake of the Great Depression. Right, the Great Depression served the predatory class in an incredible way. They were able to expand the power and the scope and the cost of the federal government beyond anything that could have been contemplated before. And one of the many programs that was born in the wake of this fiasco was the FDIC. Now, because our banking system is inherently unstable, right? Our banking system operates on something called the fractional reserve system. And so what that means is the banks only have a tiny fraction. Typically, it's around 10%. The Federal Reserve sets the number. But they only have a fraction of the deposits on hand that people have actually given them. This is actually the mechanism they use to create a bunch of money. And so prior to the FDIC, even with the FDIC, if some percentage of the depositors at any given bank go in to take their money out, the bank will collapse. They literally do not have enough money to pay back their depositors. That's a fact. And so they created the FDIC supposedly under the guise of trying to prevent bank panics, because if people realized that the federal government was always going to be there to back up their deposits, then the theory was they wouldn't panic and they wouldn't go try to take their money out of the bank, and so the bank wouldn't have to collapse. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Finish your statement there.
Well, and the FDIC is funded, of course, by fees from the banks, right? Mm-hmm. So the banking system, ultimately taxpayers are paying for this, but they've only got a few hundred billion dollars. They could maybe cover a few bank collapses, but the reality is they have nothing even approaching what would be necessary to actually insure all of the deposits under $250,000, and now theoretically unlimited by the federal government. So we're in a very dangerous situation. This is really a confidence game, and I suspect it's not going to end well, Jim.
Wow. Alex, as we talk about the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, it didn't take long for the blame to be placed on Donald Trump, who signed, they said, because he signed this bipartisan legislation that rolled back parts of the Dodd-Frank back in 2018. Is Donald Trump at fault for this collapse?
Donald Trump is absolutely not at fault for this collapse, and quite frankly, neither is Joe Biden. My guess is Joe Biden probably does not understand this. I suspect Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell probably have a pretty good understanding of this, and I'm sure Joe Biden's handlers have a pretty good understanding of this. But no, realistically, no president or even political party is responsible for this unless you want to blame them for allowing this really criminal system to continue looting the American people. And that primarily would be on the shoulders of Congress. So, I mean, in that sense, yes, Biden was a very influential senator for a period of multiple decades. He should have been doing something about this. But, you know, the cause of what we just saw with these different banks that have collapsed, it's not Joe Biden. It's not the Treasury. Really, it's Federal Reserve policy and the system itself. In this case, it really is a systemic issue.
So, if we indeed are heading toward a collapse like what we saw happen after the Roaring Twenties, we rebounded after that. Is that something that you see as being a possibility as well? Or are we at a, I mean, let me put it this way. You have been warning about a central bank digital currency for a long time. You've warned about this. Is the collapse of this banking industry, is it necessary for the collapse to take place for the central bank digital currency, or does what happened to Silicon Valley Bank or Signature Bank propel us more toward that central bank digital currency?
I think what we're watching here, Jim, is the laying of the groundwork for the unveiling of a central bank digital currency. If we were to have a broader banking crisis, which I think is a very realistic possibility, and people were to go and try to take their cash out of the bank, what's going to happen very quickly is the banks are going to have to shut their doors. They don't have the cash to give people because it's not in the system, right? As I mentioned earlier, they're literally creating currency out of thin air, loaning it into the economy. So that money is just not there. It doesn't exist. And this could very easily, and I think it may well do this, pave the way for the central bank to come in and say, look, we know there's a crisis. We know you're upset that you can't get your money out, but don't worry. The Federal Reserve's got this under control. You may not be able to pull cash out of your bank right now, but we're going to make sure that everybody's got, and because central bank digital currency has such a bad smell now, they may try to rebrand it. But I think the end goal is the same. They want to eventually sideline cash and move toward this central bank digital currency system. And I think the problems that we're seeing in the banking system are paving the way for that. Now, you asked a really good question, Jim, and I want to touch on that briefly. You know, we did recover after the Great Depression, yes. After a lot of pain, after the banking cartel, the predator class came in and scooped up our businesses and our farms and our properties and our homes for pennies on the dollar. Yeah, America eventually rebuilt. Our economy became strong once again, and that is a possibility. It is possible that America could recover, but that would require the implementation of sensible policies. That would require reforms that would actually undo the systemic issues that we have and bring in basically honest money, what we had for most of American history until the Federal Reserve System was born, and I don't believe that's a likely scenario. Now, I'd like to see that. But unfortunately, I don't think that's a likely scenario. I think much more likely is the crisis that is being engineered as we speak will be used to bring in not just a central bank digital currency, but also a new international financial architecture. And ultimately, and this may not be tomorrow, but ultimately we may see the replacement of the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency with either regional currencies or the ultimate objective. And I wrote a huge cover story article in The New American about this well over a decade ago. A single one-world currency managed by the International Monetary Fund. The system is already in place for that. The International Monetary Fund already issues this international currency. They call it special drawing rights. But as of now, the U.S. dollar is still the anchor of the system, but that could change very rapidly, especially in the face of a major currency or banking crisis.
Friends, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman is with us today. We're talking about the banking crisis, what's going on, giving some analysis of what's taking place in this collapse, where things are headed, and how do you and I fit into all of this as well? We've got a quick break here coming up, but we're going to delve a little bit further into this matter. Also looking forward to having some time on the phones with you later on the broadcast as well. So stay with us. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman writes for The New American and their website, thenewamerican.com. Back in 1 minute.
Cemeteries and mausoleums are evidence of the sad reality of death and that each of us has a divine appointment with death. According to surveys, Americans overwhelmingly believe that heaven exists and believe that most are going there. A small number believes that hell exists, with only 0.5% believing they will go there when they die. What if those who do not believe in hell die one day and find they made a tragic and eternal mistake? In the book, Hell is for Real, author Gary Fraser discusses the separation, the suffering, and the sorrow of hell, along with future events that will unfold. There is much information given by movies, television, psychics, and even by many religious circles. Gary presents scriptural truth on this important topic. VCY is making available the book, Hell is for Real, as our way of saying thank you for your support of $15 or more. Two copies for a donation of $25. Just ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
Listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman with us here today, looking at the banking crisis, what's going on. Alex, in this last segment, you really talked well about the Federal Reserve and really gave some good schooling on this, who is behind them. I mean, this private-owned cartel, as you called them, owned by shareholders or member banks that are all part of this. But who is really pulling the strings of this Federal Reserve?
Yeah, that's a good question. And one of the very important historians of recent times, he was at Georgetown University. His name was Carroll Quigley. He was a mentor to Bill Clinton. He very much viewed himself as part of the deep state. And he actually bragged about this. He said he was close to them for decades, that they had actually given him an opportunity to read their secret papers and files over a period of a couple of years. And he put a lot of his findings into a book. It's called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And he gives a lot of insight into who really is pulling the strings. He talks about the powers of financial capitalism, how they are using the central banks of the world to create a system where all economic and political control of all countries throughout the world will be in a tiny, tiny group, in very centralized hands. And he explains the process, how they hope to do this. And he gives us a lot of insight into who we're dealing with. I wrote a book on this, Deep State, the Invisible Government Behind the Scenes, trying to show, he talks about the people who manage this transition into this new system and who would ultimately end up in charge of this system. He refers to them as the Round Table Group, the powers of financial capitalism, and he gives us insight into who these organizations are. One that comes up over and over again is the Council on Foreign Relations. Very, very powerful institution, fully bipartisan in the worst way. Hillary Clinton admitted in a speech she gave there that they're the ones who are telling her what she should be doing and how she should be thinking about the future. Dick Cheney, former vice president, used to be on their board of directors. David Rockefeller was the head of this for a number of decades. You have Joe Biden actually publicly said in a speech a few years ago that Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, was his boss. That's who he worked for. And so a very powerful group. There are many others as well. Some of the ones that I focus in on in my book, we've got the Bohemian Grove in Northern California. 2,500 of the most powerful men get together each year, and they do very bizarre things, rituals and things like that. There are secret societies like the Skull and Bone Society at Yale University, the Bush family, of course, John Kerry. A lot of prominent Democrats have been members. But ultimately, I think from a biblical perspective, we need to realize that the Bible is true. And when the Bible refers to Satan as the God of this world, that's not a figure of speech. Of course, Satan is not God. Satan is not a counterpart to God or a legitimate rival to God. He's a created being. But God has given him a great deal of authority on this planet right now. Actually, 1 John chapter 5 says that the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. And in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul gives us, I think, the clearest presentation of the true reality that we live in, even though we may not see it with our eyes. He talks about, we're not dealing here with just flesh and blood. We're battling against powers and principalities and the rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. And so I think ultimately, Jim, the real answer to who runs these systems is ultimately, it's diabolical. Yeah. It is from the pit of hell. And that doesn't mean that every manager at the Federal Reserve Bank is a Satan worshiper. What it means is that we exist in a system that is controlled by forces that are hostile to God, the creator of the heavens and the earth. And as Christians, the Bible teaches that, and we need to understand that to have a proper understanding of what is going on around us.
So you believe that then there is very much a connection between what we observe happening with the Federal Reserve and those that are promoting a global economy, yay, even a global one world economic system.
There's no question. I can say that as an absolute fact.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to pull into play something that just unfolded last week. Last Wednesday, there was a press release that came from the Federal Reserve announcing the launch of what is being called FedNow Service. Ladies and gentlemen, this is scheduled to launch this coming July. There was an article, Alex, that was in Yahoo Finance, and they said it's the instant payment network that will settle accounts in seconds with the capacity to support consumer-to-consumer, consumer-to-merchant, merchant-to-merchant, and bank-to-bank transactions. With the FedNow Service, the Federal Reserve is creating a leading-edge payment system that's resilient, adaptive, and accessible, said Tom Barkin, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond and the FedNow program's executive sponsor. And the last sentence in this article said Fed Governor Michelle Bowman said last year that FedNow, which will enable consumers and businesses to send payments instantly, could offer some of the same benefits as a central bank digital currency. Your comment on this issue?
Yeah, what this is, Jim, is a central part of the architecture of the central bank digital currency. And so I think people need to understand we're not going to wake up tomorrow and find out that cash is gone and we all have to use these central bank digital currencies. It's going to be a process. It's going to be implemented over time, probably with crises serving to accelerate and maybe even serving as the catalyst to bring it about. And a big part of that architecture is this ability right now being worked on by the Federal Reserve to transfer money, quote unquote, or currency, immediately through the Federal Reserve systems from consumers to consumers, from consumers to businesses, and from businesses to businesses. So this is the architecture that is eventually going to pave the way for this broader central bank digital currency system. And you asked me earlier, Jim, about, you know, who's really running this system. Well, one of the key institutions that Carol Quigley identifies, it's called the Bank for International Settlements. It's an obscure, it's kind of a central bank for central banks. And Quigley acknowledges that these are all private institutions. And the managing director of this Bank for International Settlements, which, again, is almost totally unknown by the public, but one of the most influential institutions in the world, they are coordinating the global push for central bank digital currencies. And their managing director actually said, and I've got the video, I've used it in some of my talks. In fact, I used it when I came up to Wisconsin. He explains very clearly that central bank digital currencies are fundamentally different from cash because, in his words, they will allow the central banks to have absolute control over the spending, the processing, and the receipt of these currencies. And we need to recognize that that's ultimately the end goal, and this system that's being emerging now, this FedNow, is a critical component of that broader system.
Alex, if you would just take a moment here to just contrast what we're seeing unfold before us right now, from the collapse to actions that we're seeing take place, to what an honest monetary system would look like for our nation.
Yeah, I think that's so important, Jim, for people to realize. You know, if it were ever possible for, you know, true Americans who love God and who love our country to regain control of our governing institutions, we really could bring back a fair and an honest monetary system. And I believe, just like in virtually any other asset or industry, a free market is what works the best. Now, God repeatedly throughout the Bible refers to gold and precious metals as money. And for virtually all of human history, especially in civilized societies, gold and silver and sometimes other valuable metals and scarce metals were used as money. And I believe that's what would emerge in a free market. If we did not have a central bank to create currency out of thin air and tell us what interest rates were going to be, I believe very rapidly a free market monetary system would emerge. We would go back to market-based interest rates, which would end almost overnight this crazy boom and bust cycle that just basically is like a steady heartbeat extracting wealth from the poor and the middle class, sending it to the rich. And so, you know, without any kind of government intervention, without any kind of central bank, I think what would happen is people would naturally gravitate toward things that are scarce, things that have the properties that historically people have found useful in money. It should be portable. It should be durable. It should be scarce, obviously, because, you know, you don't want to carry around boulders or trucks full of leaves to make payments. And the benefits from that, really, America emerged as a superpower with honest money at its core. And our Constitution actually talks about this, right? In the Constitution. It says no state shall make anything other than gold or silver a payment, a legal tender in payment of debts. And I think we need to get back to that. That would be the ideal, is to just go back to an honest monetary system. And you know, it's so critical for people to understand interest rates. I know a lot of people's eyes glaze over when you talk about this, but of all the prices in an economy, the most important price is the price of money. It's the price of capital. In a free market system, the price of capital, in other words, the interest rate, would be determined based on the supply of loanable funds. You know, that's basically savings, right? How much money do people have saved up that they're willing to lend? And the demand. So how much demand is there for money, for businesses to expand, for consumers to purchase houses, for consumers to purchase cars? And where those two intersect on a supply and demand graph, that's where the price of money would be. That would be the interest rate. And that actually has the function of smoothing out the markets in a wonderful way. And we all know central planning doesn't work. If you don't believe me, go to Cuba. Right? Go look at the old Soviet collective agricultural system. Central planning doesn't work. And yet with this Federal Reserve system, we have a central planning committee, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee, that is literally centrally planning the most important price in our economy. That's the interest rate. So even if these people were well-intentioned, which, again, I think is a very naive assumption, and it's almost self-evidently not true, but even if these people were well-intentioned, central planners can never make or replicate the good decisions that millions and billions of people, free people in a free market, make. And so even under the best of circumstances, central planning fails. We really should, if we ever have an opportunity to implement good policies in this country again, we really should return to an honest monetary system based on free market principles, which I believe are the principles that God has actually recommended and in some cases mandated for humanity.
Our guest today is Alex Newman. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 1-800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829, taking your questions or brief comments. I would like to mention as well that Alex is going to be one of the speakers at the Wisconsin Christian News Solemn Assembly and Conference April 14 and 15. It's called The Great Pushback Against the Great Reset, taking place up in the Wausau, Wisconsin area. And again, Wisconsin Christian News is spearheading this, a solemn assembly and conference. And if you need more information, cost information, et cetera, you can reach out to Wisconsin Christian News at 715-486-8066. Our lines are packed. Let's go right to the calls here. We've got Mac calling from Northwest Florida. And Mac, you're on the air.
Thank you for this really timely subject. It's amazing. I recently finished reading that Creature from Jekyll Island, and it truly opened up my eyes. And it's just as Alex is saying, with the expansion and contraction of the money supply, we've got some real urgent matters on our hand. The IMF and the WEF. It just kind of blows your mind away. And you tag in there the Jacksonian era, and how General Jackson never trusted the banking systems, and it all comes to exactly what you're discussing today, you know. And the IMF is at the seat of it, along with the WEF. And there's a lot of good articles written on it. I'd like to hear your comments on that. And I'll hang up.
Thank you, Mac.
Well, thank you for calling in, Mac. And I highly recommend the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. It's, I think, the single best historical work on the origins of the Federal Reserve, and gets really into some great detail on how the Federal Reserve operates. I can't recommend it highly enough. I've actually been to Jekyll Island several times, and the government has signs there admitting to everything that the book talks about, right? That the bankers and the politicians came together in these secret meetings, and they didn't tell anybody. They snuck onto trains at night to go down there. The institutions you mentioned are critically important. The International Monetary Fund, which they've been grooming to become the global central bank for decades now, that process has been underway. The World Economic Forum, of course, brings all of the big businesses and governments together around the table to work on these things. And I mentioned also the Bank for International Settlements. There are many, but thank you for the call, Mac.
Thank you for the call. We will be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Again, our number 800-733-9829.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. March 7th, 2023, the Pentagon, working in conjunction with an astronomy department at Harvard University has released a paper. Please understand, this is the Pentagon that has released this paper. And what are they talking about? The fact that a mothership hovering between the Earth and the Sun is likely sending probes to check out Earth, UFOs. They call them unidentified aerial phenomenon. Folks, did you ever think you'd see the day when the Pentagon, working with Harvard, would release such a paper saying these may be extraterrestrials? Well, I believe, as I've said for so many years, the stage is being set for a great global spiritual deception. They're looking for a technocratic savior, a technology savior, and they may be shocked at what manifests. I think it's of demons and demonology.
Tuned to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman with us today. Folks, he writes for The New American. And Alex, these topics are nothing new to the magazine. You've been covering these for many, many, many years.
Yeah, I have been, Jim. And, you know, if people want to really get into the details of how this process works, back during the last financial crisis, I did a very in-depth article called Fed Manipulations in the Crosshairs, really getting into detail on how the Federal Reserve works, how they produce these crises, how these crises serve to loot the poor and the middle class, to further enrich the uber elites, the predator class. And then also I did a companion set of cover story articles on the shift toward a one-world currency. This was, again, well over a decade ago. People can find those. They're still available online at thenewamerican.com. On the shift toward a one-world monetary system, a one-world currency, and a global Federal Reserve Bank. And those will give a whole lot more details on these issues than we've had time to offer here on this program.
Okay. And again, the website, folks, thenewamerican.com. Brad is calling from West Allis, Wisconsin. Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. Your guest touched on the fractional reserve system we've got, and people don't know what's being... They're being scammed. A lot of them don't know. What should be going on is when a bank takes a deposit, say $1,000, they're supposed to leave 10% on hand. That'd be $100, and then they can lend the other 900, which is the 90% that they can lend. But what's going on is they're keeping the entire $1,000 on hand and saying, you know what, this $1,000 is actually 10%. And then we're going to create another $900 out of thin air and call that the 90% and lend that out to people. So people are borrowing $9,000 in funny money and paying the interest with real money that they earned. This is how we're getting it from both ends. You got the banks on one end making money out of thin air, and the government and Federal Reserve together making money out of thin air.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. Any comment, Alex?
Yeah, I would encourage people to study the fractional reserve system of banking and also the way that the Federal Reserve creates currency and loans it into the economy. It sounds too incredible to be true. You ask yourself, you know, how could Americans allow this criminal system to operate? Unfortunately, it is the reality. And once you see through the fancy terminology that they use to try to obfuscate, it becomes very obvious what's happening here. This is just really the wholesale looting of Americans. And what happens with the fractional reserve system, even if they were to loan out that $900 and just keep $100 in deposit, what would happen is that as that money works its way through the commercial banking system, it would eventually result in the creation of massive, massive amounts, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of new currency that the banks are then using to finance mortgages and auto loans and things like this. And again, the currency is being created out of nothing, and the mortgage holders or the mortgagees and the auto loan people who are taking the loans, they end up paying interest on money that was created out of nothing, and the interest was never created. So as all these loans get paid back, the currency gets sucked out of the system, the whole system collapses. I recognize it's complicated. I recognize it's confusing. It's meant to be, but it is critical that people understand what's going on.
Thank you, Brad. Let's go to Jerry next. Jerry in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
If you are retired, you have no debts, your house is paid for, you got $120,000 in gold coin and $350,000 in cash. What specifically would you put that $350,000 in rather than leaving it in our fiat currency?
Fantastic question, and I wish I had a good answer for you. Unfortunately, I don't. What I will say is that, you know, I'm not a financial advisor, so I never give anybody financial advice, but I'm happy to share what my family and I have done with our meager savings. You know, I think gold and silver are probably as good of an investment, at least for preservation of wealth, as one can find right now. But I always warn people about the caveat. During the Great Depression, just using an executive order, FDR actually confiscated everybody's gold. They made it illegal to own gold. And they could certainly do that again if they chose to. Whether they will or not, I really don't know. Same thing with land. You know, agricultural land, I think, is very valuable. They're not making any more of it. In fact, more and more of it is getting taken out of production. Mm-hmm. But there's always the risk that they can either tax it away or just outright confiscate it. And with the situation with the capital gains tax is such that as these things rise in monetary value, as the price goes up in U.S. dollars, the federal government will consider that to be a capital gain, and they're going to seize a big part of that anyway. And, you know, finally, I would say it may not be a bad idea to keep some cash on hand. You know, from an investment strategy, we're sitting on a little bit of cash because if stocks continue to crater, if companies and real estate values continue to fall, which I think they will, there may be some good buying opportunities for stocks and real estate and things like that going forward. But in this environment, I really think as Christians, we need to get comfortable with the idea that we may lose everything, right? All of the money that we've saved may end up being looted from us, and that we just have to, you know, have trust in the Lord that you know, He is ultimately sovereign. It's going to work out. And but I do recommend, you know, Proverbs talks about the prudent man sees danger coming and prepares himself and takes some sensible precautions, whereas the fool does not. I think as Christians we should be discerning. We should recognize that danger is on the horizon. We have an obligation to protect and support our families. And so as Christians, we should be looking at what's happening and trying to come up with sensible ways to protect ourselves.
Thank you for the call. Doug in Des Moines, Iowa, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Jim and Alex, for your work well done. And the question, a couple questions here.
We got 1 minute, so go real ahead.
Unions and the banks one and the same? Because I'm thinking they got a tendency of work in the same system.
Okay, credit unions, Alex, compared to banks.
Well, credit unions are different than banks in an important way in that they're owned by their members. And I think one of the agendas with the Biden administration coming out and saying, you know, we're going to bail out some banks but not other banks, I think one of the things that they want to do is actually see a massive consolidation. They want people who are banking with small local banks, with small credit unions, to get nervous and to start pulling their deposits and to put them in, you know, the big mega banks like Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo. These are all banks that have been collaborating with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury on central bank digital currencies. It will be much easier to usher in this new financial order if they can collapse the smaller banks and have them all gobbled up by the big banks. And one thing that would do that is to have senior U.S. officials, as we've seen, say, we're going to bail out certain banks, systemically important banks, but we're not going to bail out your little local credit union. And in fact, that's exactly what we saw. A lot of people pulled deposits out of smaller banks and credit unions and moved them over to big banks. I suspect that's deliberate.
Wow. We have run out of time. I know you've got more questions. We've got other people on hold, and we apologize for that, friends. But a lot of information. Alex, thank you for joining us here for the broadcast today.
Thank you so much, Jim. God bless you.
And friends, again, through all of this, make sure your eyes are on the Lord. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.